You are listening to Embodied People, a podcast co-hosted by Sarah Donahue and myself, Colleen Wall. We are both somatic movement educators and dance professors. We are also faculty at Integrated Movement Studies. In this podcast, we explore all things embodied. We explore anatomy, we explore meaning, metaphor, and how we make sense of out of our lives through our bodies. We also talk about developmental motor patterning, how it affects our psychological and emotional and psychic states as adults. And we really love to offer you movement practices and meditations that deepen your experience of your body so that your body is a generative place for you in your life. That is, it helps guide you towards and supports you in living the life that is most fulfilling for you. This podcast is sponsored by Integrated Movement Studies, and that is a certification program in the Laban-Bartynieff Movement Studies system. And if you'd like more information on Integrated Movement Studies and what the Laban-Bartynieff system is, beyond what we offer in this podcast, you can check out our website, imsmovement.com. Hey, thanks for listening to Embodied People. This is Colleen talking, and I'm here with Sarah, and we have a special guest this week. We have Juliana Hain, and Juliana Hain has lived a full-bodied life as a movement enthusiast through many, many different iterations and incarnations of studying movement. And so today we're going to talk to her about work that she's currently doing and how the experiences and studies that she's had, and I'll tell you about her background a little bit more in a second, but how they've sort of come into the moment now of what she's studying, which is pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy. But that doesn't come out of anywhere. We don't enter into physical therapy knowing nothing, anybody, but Juliana especially has a huge, robust background. So she has an MFA in dance from the University of Utah from 2010. She's a certified Laban Movement Analyst through Integrated Movement Studies, which she completed in 2008. She is a practicing Pilates instructor, and she has a background in aerial dance. And she has taught dance and higher ed for years and is now in Rock Hill, South Carolina, in physical therapy school. And so one of the things that I think we're going to hear about from her on this trajectory is a background in both really expressive, imagistic, metaphorical, meaningful pursuits of human movement, and then also these really functional and maybe you'd say practical, though the expressive I think is also practical, but these more functional, technical, how to move, how to feel better, ways of approaching human movement and how they inform each other and swirl together. And anyway, so that is where we are going. So welcome, Juliana. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
So this is Sarah, and let's jump in. That was a great intro, Colleen. Thank you for kind of setting up where we are. And I'm thinking, I just want to hear a little bit more, Juliana, about like these different movement aspects of your life. Because it feels very like diverse, like Pilates and aerial dance. And maybe you can kind of describe that a little bit for the listeners. Like what is involved in aerial dance. And I'm thinking how these like different ways of moving, how the past in your like your physical memory of doing them, even if you're not currently still like doing them as much, like how the embodiment of these practices is feeding you now in your work as a PT student.
Yeah, so as you've said, I've had quite a lot of different movement practices in my life. Started with dance growing up. My dad signed me up for dance classes because he thought I was uncoordinated. And he didn't realize it would stick and become a passion of mine. It just became this place where I felt so much freedom to express myself in ways that other movement forms like sports maybe didn't fulfill the same need that dance fulfilled for me. So I was involved with that from a really young age, and went to college in architecture originally. And then 2 weeks into the program, I was hunched over a drawing tiny little boxes and going, I can't do this anymore. I can't move this small. it just wasn't allowing me to use space in the way that I love to use space, even though architecture is all about space. The actual movement of the practitioner is quite small and limited. So that's where I found myself breaking to my parents that I wanted to major in dance. And they were a little worried about that. How are you going to make a living, this and that? But we talked it through, and I decided to study dance education so that I could always perform and then teach, and completed that. Taught children for quite a while before going to graduate school. And then during undergrad, that's where I encountered aerial dance originally. So one of my professors walked into our audition and said, hey, I'm going to do a vertical dance, is what it was called back then, with the rope and harness. And you need to be able to do 20 push-ups. And so I could not do 20 push-ups. So I faked it, did little baby push-ups, and find my name on the cast list. A couple of days later, went up to the choreographer, thanked her profusely. I'm so excited to be in your piece. I couldn't believe I got cast. And she's like, yeah, I forgot. I lost my cast list and just picked people. I'm like, no wonder, because I did not do those push-ups, but I still got in. And kind of the rest is history, because when I actually got in the air, we were hanging from a static rope in a rock climbing harness, and we had to climb a ladder to get up there and hooked in. So it's very different than what I've done more recently, which is more like the circus arts side of things. But I just remember feeling incredible freedom, like this ability to move in space in ways that you really can't access on the ground, like being able to invert or using your backspace in a very different way, tumbling backwards. All of that just felt so alive for me. And it struck me that, oh, this is what I really am interested in. So I've continued to pursue aerial dance from that point forward. MFA in the University of Utah, I did aerial dance as part of my thesis work. Ended up training aerial instructors for a long time, really enjoyed that. And then just became really interested in injuries because of all the injuries aerialists encounter, and started following some physical therapists who work with circus artists, and thinking, oh my gosh, I really want to stretch more into my scope of practice. How can I expand my scope of practice so that I can dive deeper into the realm of injury and recovery, partially because I've had so many injuries myself and felt like that's such a huge need. So it's kind of a long trailing story, but that's that's how I've been able to access so many different movement practices. And of course, Pilates filters into that as well. And Pilates is fascinating because the program I did, a lot of the language that was used connected with the Laban work so beautifully. So I didn't feel like I was doing something different or new. I felt like I was being reminded of something that I already knew, and then layering onto it some new information. And that's how I see all the movement practices I've done. It's everything's just another layering or going deeper into, rather than like, oh, this other separate thing. It all connects to me.
Yeah, I have a thought from what you just said about some of those connections. Maybe you can give us like an example or two. So you're currently in PT school, and are you working with clients regularly now?
I'm still in the didactic portion of the program, but I will start clinicals in February, end of February. Uh-huh. So we do both an inpatient experience, which is more acute care or hospital or rehab facility, and then we also do an outpatient, which is more what you think of when you go to PT, like doing my exercises for the musculoskeletal injury that I have.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm curious, like when you talked about finding that freedom in aerial dance, just like, and I love how you said like that freedom of space, because yeah, it's just like a whole different orientation to space. Right? I've never done it, but I've, you know, just like seeing it, I'm like, wow, it's just a whole other ball game. I'm just curious, like how, like what you think connections you might draw back from living in that world to like working with clients in PT that might feed, you know, people who are maybe less mobile, or I'm sure you'll have a range of clients, but like what connections you might draw back from your embodied experience of doing aerial into this world of physical therapy.
Yes, I was teaching, I used to teach beginners aerial dance, did that for a long time. And I'll never forget, there was one cue that I would give in this one position in dance, we call it an arabesque. And it's where you have one leg out behind you and one leg down, and you're reaching your other arm in the opposite direction. So it's like this big expression, like reaching through space. And I would have students go into the shape and just kind of hang there. And my cue would be, okay, reach through your fingertips around toward your back leg. And as soon as they did that, their face lit up. And that was so profound learning for me, because I realized that obviously movement's more than an aerial is more than just shapes. It's an inner experience of an outward expression. And how can you get people to find that? And everyone's a little bit different in how they find that. But to me, my hope is that I can teach people movement in a way that shows them the joy that is inside of the movement, and that then they will enjoy moving. Because so many people, when they move, they're in pain, right? And it, and then they don't want to move. And then when you stop moving, that health just declines. Like, we know that from the literature. And so our job as physical therapists is to get people moving and keep them moving. So my thought is, well, how can I use my creativity, my background in all of these different ways of moving to invite people into the joy of movement? And it's not just like, oh, I have to do my exercises, I have to tick off this list. And that can be valuable. And some people are really motivated by that. Some people are not, especially performing artists. Performing artists need to be interested. You have to make it exciting for them to want to keep doing the exercises. They don't like doing, as we all know, we don't like doing the same thing over and over. We like to explore and find different ways around. So I think there's a lot of room and need for physical therapists who want to work with people who the traditional method of home exercise program maybe doesn't jive with them, and they need a new approach.
I love that. That sounds, that just feels so like Irmgard Britannia. It's very reminiscent of, so for the listeners, part of this work is the work of Irmgard Britannia, who was a physical therapist, and, but kind of had the realization that like, oh, if people are connected to the movement that they're doing, it works better. Instead of me just moving your arm for you as the physical therapist, that like, if you are experiencing it as the patient or the client, that there's more connection and there's more, I think it worked better, you know?
Yeah. It's one thing, like, to jump off what you're saying. It's like, I could go for a run because I'm supposed to go for a run. And then I'm bringing that spirit into the running. Or I could go for a run because I enjoy how it feels to hurl myself through space. And then that comes with a feeling of potential joy. And sure, there'll still be hard work, but it motivates my run, or infuses my run with a different energy, a different background. I want to just notice these couple of themes that you're saying, Juliana. One is that your origin story was that your dad got you dancing because you were uncoordinated. So it started with sort of maybe, if you will, fixing something that he perceived that was functionally lacking for you. But what came out was like your love, the joy of it, the expressivity of it. And that also invited in like the moving big. And so your body, like when you went to architecture school and the space was small and the limit was too much, like the limit of the space was such that it was too much for your body to handle. And you were like, no, I can't do this. I need the spaciousness, the freedom of dancing. That in a certain way that for you, the both the motivation of the movement like has propelled you forward, and that your body has been like a guide towards the energy of where you want to put your life. So like in a way you've lived out what it is that you're bringing into clinical practice and becoming a physical therapist. Yeah. That's not so much a question as it is a reflection. But I do have a question. When you think about some of what you're learning in physical therapy school, are there certain like patterns, whether it's cultural patterns, or like human movement patterns that tend to show up and then cause like patterns of pain in people's bodies, like that may exist on a movement level, things that are commonly occurring that you notice?
It's a really good question. You could divide it into two buckets to be simple, that there are pathologies or diseases that cause pain and restriction in movement. And then there are movement patterns that cause pain and restriction in movement. And the physical therapist gets the opportunity to work with both. And to try to navigate that is it gets pretty complex because you have to understand the medical side of things and tissue damage, but then you also have to understand movement and how and if and when certain movement repetitively causes tissue damage. So trying to tease that apart is part of the work. I feel like it's difficult because a lot of the literature that we have looking at movement-caused problems is conflicting. So, for example, I think a lot of us would like intuit that, oh, if your posture is slumped and your head's way forward and you're rounding your shoulders all day long at your keyboard, that might cause back pain. The literature says the opposite, that there's no correlation between posture and back pain. So that's where things get kind of confusing. But we also know that if there's a repeated asymmetrical load on a structure, and it will start to wear down over time, and that wearing down causes pain for some people. It doesn't cause pain for other people. That's also conflicting. So I don't know if I have like a clear, I wish I had a clear answer. I don't at this point. I'm still navigating those waters myself. I do know from my own, like living in my own body, that if I'm too still for too long, I have pain. If I, and usually that stillness, mainly because my body isn't able to recuperate naturally. So if I'm holding a position for a long period of time, my muscles start to get tired and then I start to collapse. And then that collapse puts me in a less than optimal position for loading. And gravity starts pulling on me in weird ways. And then, oh, my neck hurts now because I've been trying to hold this one position too long. I think most PTs would agree that the new statement now is the best position is your next position. Rather than like, here's what perfect posture looks like. We're less concerned with getting caught up in that and more concerned with how do we keep people changing positions?
Yeah.
Or moving throughout their day, incorporating movement into their day so that all of our tissues like get movement and nourishment and flow in more equal ways than unequal ones.
Yeah. And I hear in what you're saying too, that there's an individual uniqueness. So instead of striving for this image of something perfect of a body that doesn't exist, right? That's a fantasy. It's working, like coming into working with what the body that you have is, and its unique architecture, its unique shape and design. And then finding ways to keep it moving. I also hear that pain is a motivator for attention for a lot of people, that it is discomfort and pain that will motivate them to pay or get them in some way, maybe not motivate, but will force them, in another term, to pay attention to their bodies and movement and then show up at something like physical therapy. And
absolutely.
Then have to get up and go for a walk or whatever it is.
Yes, it's a pretty loud alarm bell. I think, and it's interesting that culturally that's the alarm bell. That's how loud the alarm bells have to be for us to make a change, is we have to wait until we're in, some people have to be in pretty extreme pain before they'll reach out and ask for help. Others of us, I don't know if this includes a lot of different kinds of movers or what, but there are some people who have like a really quiet alarm bell and like, oh, I should probably shift position now, or, oh, I need to go for a walk. And it's just like this sense of, I don't know. I sometimes feel like an itch. It's not a literal itch, but it's just like tossing and turning inside my body that says, I gotta like move or shift or attend. I've got to take care of my inner self by moving in space. And then I'll be able to come back and focus on what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, similar for me, I will, I almost feel like I just can't focus anymore, or I just can't do this anymore. I'm starting to feel uncomfortable and I can't always tell why, but I know that I'm at the end of what feels like a productive rope or attentive rope. And for me, it's really doesn't, I don't have very long, but I also think I have a high threshold for feeling good. And so it's not like I have to feel bad. I just know what it feels like to be able to ride it out. And then it's like, it's literally like I can't take in and I can't put out and I have to go do something else for a little while. And I hit that this morning. I was trying to write some emails. And so I got up and I started moving and I laid on my belly for a while. And I was reflecting about how appreciative I feel of having a moving life and inroads that are easy to remember that I have a body. So it's not like I had to do hard push-ups. I just had to swipe my hands along my arms and my legs and be like, here's your body. You're here. Like they were easy and simple. And you know, it doesn't solve everything, but it at least brings me in my awareness and my consciousness to a new attention that is refreshing.
Yeah, that sense of recuperation, like exertion, recuperation, rhythm or balance, that I feel like that's another point where I'll experience neck or back pain is when I've locked myself in front of the computer and I have to push through. I have to get this thing done. I have to turn it in by this time. I'm not getting up. That's when my body starts locking down. And it's like I'm overriding this other intuitive sense of my body that needs movement. And I'm still kind of grappling with how to navigate that for myself in healthy ways. Because yes, there are deadlines. And if you don't meet the deadline for the thing, there's a consequence attached to that. But at the same time, I need to honor my own exertion, my need for recuperation, and get my work done. I need to do both.
Yeah. You know, this is making me think of it makes me think of like a stream, and like a healthy stream has movement and things like coming in and out of it and changing like all the time. And I'm so lucky I get to dance like almost every day, you know, teach. And I always just feel so much better when I do. And as soon as the semester ends or there's a break, my body starts hurting. And then it's as soon as I can get back in and just teach every day, at least do that, then things start to kind of, I just picture my body kind of like negotiating balance, right? So it's like, oh, like my neck is hurting. Okay. So then just kind of working its way out through movement. But it also makes me think about, you know, when you try something new, you know, like a new activity, physical activity, or, you know, or maybe even just like, I was like scrubbing my bathtub and I was like, oh, those are some muscles I do not access often, you know? So just that, you know, that thought of like, yeah, you were saying like the next move is like, or what did you say? Your next like movement is the next right thing is the next thing.
Yeah. Your best position is the next position.
Yeah, the next. Just like that change is like that things keep changing. And I also think even like being an active person, how I still am kind of limited in like the movements that I do. And there's like other possibilities for movement that I don't necessarily find, or I don't find them in terms of like the energy qualities. Like I don't do a lot of like kind of fast, quick, hard, you know, like combative sort of like sports or something like that. Just thinking about like what that would bring to kind of like fill out this organism and keep it like as healthy as it could be.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the Laban system, is it gives us a map to be able to identify and understand all different movement possibilities, and to look at what we prefer and then what might be missing from our movement signature. And it's an opportunity to say, maybe I could go take a self-defense class because I have a hard time with strong weight effort or any of the above, whatever movement quality or spatial use of space you maybe don't access, but you might be interested or intrigued by. That's an invitation to explore something new.
Yeah, I'll share something personal on that. Was when I was a student in the certification program, my application project. So as you go through the Laban Bartonia certification program at Integrated Movement Studies, everybody picks something that they are interested in, bringing their Laban Bartonia of learning to shed light on that thing through what they're learning at IMS. And I would not let a student do this project now because I just don't think it can be successful. But I tried it, and I tried to study my exertion recuperation patterns. And it's way too hard to study yourself. Like, you can't do that, especially the first time. That's a lifetime endeavor. And I think it's more private than like doing a project on it. But what I did figure out was that I don't have a whole lot of these fighting qualities. Like, I don't have a whole lot of strong and actually for me sustained. Like, those were pretty absent. I did not like to use sort of force and power in a prolonged, elongated way. And also in a quick way, but time and strength, no. But then I also noticed that there were places in my life that were my favorite places about my life that I didn't do a lot, but that were so dear and sacred to me. So like the football, tackling. When I played football, I loved wakeboarding and all of these activities that were my favorite things that I didn't do very much, but made me feel most alive, contained something about those energies, like the strong, quicker sustained. And so that was enough for me to like realize that I had to, if I was going to be as whole a mover and probably as whole a person as I could be, I needed to like activate that more in my life. And so now I have things like boxing club, which is about, in a lot of cases, some strong weight with quickness or sustainment. And rock climbing brings that. And while I don't really play football anymore, I have even noticed that in my teaching and in my one-on-one work with clients, like that there brings, I often bring some strong weight into some of those places in a way that I don't. So there's something about a part of the self that emerges. And so I wonder about that too. When people are, because pain pathways, pain is its own thing that brings people into attending to their bodies, but pain sometimes can't even really be dealt with. Like sometimes pain is going to be there, but there's other ways that we can perceive the possibilities or the quest, the thirst of the body. And so pain might bring us into that conversation, but then what we ultimately like brings us life and brings us joy might be something totally different. And yeah, so I'm thinking about rehabilitation as or physical therapy or body therapies in general. Like there's the what brings us in, and then there's the where it can take us, which can be two really, really different conversations, I think.
Absolutely. And the traditional model is that you come into PT because you're in pain and it's in a specific spot in your body, and you get that spot worked on and you get sent home with your exercises, and then however many weeks later, you're better, perfect. We'll discharge you. And then, but there's this other space in physical therapy that I see growing now, that people can go in not for crisis management, but for crisis prevention. That you can, and this, the big difference is the insurance-based model. You need to present with a problem that the PT can address. If you go cash-based model, those practices are PTs that treat, can still treat the problem that a traditional PT would treat, but they're also looking at what are the patient's goals in movement. Like, and it can expand. Like a physical therapist's practice license is pretty flexible. Like there's a lot of space for us to move around in. And a patient can come in with the goal of, okay, yeah, maybe I have this like thing that bothers me in my shoulder. It's not really painful. It's just kind of annoying, or there's a click or something, and it's preventing me from doing this thing that I want to do. And then, but the shoulder thing's actually caused by a hip thing that I happened years ago that I never rehabbed. And so then that PT can start tracing back an injury memory or pathway, or peel the layers of the onion, if you will, and go back and work on root causes. And then some people go in monthly to their PT to get kind of maintenance work done to keep that shoulder happy so they can play pickleball or whatever it is that they want to do. And I love that physical therapy is expanding in these different realms because it means that we can help more people, and also we can prevent mobility issues long term.
This is,
Yeah.
oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Sarah.
It's just making me think of what you kind of talked about in the intro, Colleen, about this function expression interplay. Just that I love that idea of like meeting with a client and saying, well, what do you like to do in your life? How do you like to move in your life? What brings you joy? What makes you feel good? Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, like this interplay, because you know, as we know, PT like maybe started out as like, okay, let's fix this thing. And that's been my experience of it. And I've always waited till it's like crisis time of like, please help me. I can't turn my head, you know? But like how, and then also maybe like part two of this question is, are there any like parts of like the Bartholomew Laban system that you're like, that you know that you're going to like really bring into like working with these clients or getting to that like part of expressive, the expressive component of their movement?
It's a really good question. And it's something I've been chewing on a lot because I'm not totally sure yet how the Laban Bartholomew work is going to manifest in my own clinical practice, mainly because I'm still in the didactic and I haven't had the chance to really dig into that. However, I do work with Pilates clients, and working with them, I do end up doing a lot of the basic six from Bartholomew fundamentals, which is like the thigh lift, which some people in physical therapy, it's called marching. Some of these foundational movements that you would do lying on your back to move your arms and legs against a stable center to get people organized for more challenging Pilates exercises. And what I notice or what my Laban Bartholomew lens offers me as an instructor is I get a lot more information than what and where. I can get a read on how and why. And of course, I'm in some ways projecting because we can't really know what someone's motivation for doing something is without asking them. But I can definitely, I get more information about their strategy choices.
Yeah.
How are they accomplishing moving in this shape and space? What kind of quality of movement are they using? Is it working? Are they able to get proximal stability by using that quality? Or is that the quality choice hindering them? Or is there, and then this is where the functional part of it comes in of, well, why is that muscle not firing? Mm-hmm. That's odd. And that's where like having the PT knowledge for me is going to be so rich and contribute so much, is that now I can understand things like why a muscle isn't firing and what I can do to help it to fire. But then also the expressive piece comes in because as y'all know, when the psoas starts working really deeply, it's like you're moving from your gut. It's a very different experience to move from this like super deep place of center self or your whole being, or integrating all of your limbs into your core and feeling that sense of coming into self or moving away from self. And I see people's faces change when they move with a deeper level of connection. And I find that so, that's what excites me about this work, is that we're not just helping people to move better to stay out of pain. And that's super important and valuable. But we're also helping people to connect more deeply to themselves as movers and to enjoy movement, and also to feel maybe they have more access to new choices or new options from working with a physical therapist.
It occurs to me as you're talking that physical therapy is a place to get movement education. And movement education is something that, unless you study dance, but still you're probably studying dance, not movement in most cases, or you go to PE, phys ed in grade school through high school, but then you're probably more or less learning to play sports. But none of these are really an education about your own moving body. Like, and so to that PT is a place to pursue a depth of movement education that maybe hasn't been filled out, like you might go to psychotherapy for emotional education, or like dream education. And so you're changing my perception of physical therapy as you're talking about it. And I think the other thing I want to say is like, What brought that up for me is that when you were talking about like moving from your deep guts, like I think people know that that's a possibility. We hear talking about it, but how we'd actually get there feels nebulous, I think, in a lot of cases. And so to have somebody who can see what's happening as a physical therapist can know there's another possibility, and then both functionally expressively support somebody to move more and more towards that experience is a, I think, a profound gift of life. Like,
Yeah, it's a big piece of physical therapy is patient education or client education. Because a lot of times, the problems that people come to physical therapy with occur because of a misunderstanding or a lack of knowledge about how the body works or how a person moves through their day. Maybe there is too much limitation in movement by sitting in a chair for 8 hours, and why the hip flexors are super tight now and there's neck pain. So it's great because I'm like, of course, I wish this were part of elementary school, that every child would learn more about how their bodies move well and to stay healthy long term. It's just not possible to pack everything we want kids to know into that education. But as an adult, there you can learn so much more about how your body moves and how to keep it healthy, and like all the layers of intricacy, like as deep as you want to go. I think a physical therapist can get really nerdy with you. They're happy to share at the level of depth that you prefer, or if you want it really simple, like we're constantly training ourselves. Okay, how would you speak to another physical therapist about what's happening with this client? Okay, how would you speak to the client about what's happening to the client? How do you go back and forth so that you can use all these different ways of communicating and using language to express what's happening in the body, so that that person feels empowered with that new knowledge to then go out, oh, if I change this, this problem might go away. And wow, that could change my life.
Thinking, I'm like right when you said empowered, this is, I don't, this is something I've been offering to my students lately who are dance majors. So like almost in that like yes, like let's like do some education about the body and your body and how it works, but also like maybe it's a process of remembering because you did it once. Like you were once a toddler who squatted beautifully and had like wonderful femoral flexion, you know, and we tend to lose these things because of the patterns maybe that we move through life in, and sitting in chairs and wearing shoes and, you know, like the things that kind of limit mobility. But just this, you know, this thought of, and certainly like the fundamentals, the, you know, Bartunian fundamentals are about repatterning developmental, you know, patterns from early life, but it's in there. Like it's like your body knows it and your body's done it. And it's, I know it sounds like a little like out there, you know, but like, can you remember what it was like to have all of your limbs connected to your center? And I don't know, I'm interested in that. So it's that maybe it comes from a place of like, oh, we just need to like pull it to this, resurface it, you know, as opposed to like you don't know this and let me teach you.
Yeah, well, there's this yes, there is this sense of a lot of times the adult mind is used to consuming or processing information by reading or by hearing someone explain it, or being told. But yeah, movement, I mean, your body can teach you so much if you move it. And I love this idea of remembering, because like you said, our bodies have their own way of knowing that maybe the conscious mind can't or isn't aware of. And what does that mean? And then we get into like mind body split, mind body connection conversations. I love it. It's fascinating.
So speaking of remembering, before we got on hit record, Juliana, you said that you have been doing tummy time lately for yourself. And so like, why that choice? With everything that you know, what is it bringing you in your embodied knowing, your remembering? And what is tummy time? Let's start with that. What is tummy time? And why have you been doing it? What's been happening?
So tummy time is a term used generally in pediatrics when babies are working on their own movement patterns, learning how to navigate their world. They lay on the front on their tummy, and that helps them to develop their extensor muscles is the idea. And then of course, being able to lift up the head and then look around and take in their environment and maybe see something they want and then start to move away from or move toward the thing that they want. And we've been talking about that. I'm in taking a pediatrics course right now. And then I'm also taking a course on bracing and orthotics and prosthetics. And recently learned that the patient who experiences limb loss or limb absence can do tummy time exercises to prepare themselves, to prepare their bodies for getting a prosthesis and then learning how to walk with the prosthetic limb, which is just fascinating to me. It makes so much sense though, but of course we want that back chain working properly in order to improve gait. And, you know, coming from having the Labanbartinyak background, of course, tummy time or working prone on elbows, however you want to talk about it, is such an important part of the work. And so I started incorporating that into my morning movement practice of like, oh, what if I, instead of doing, of course, I'm doing exercises in prone as part of my morning practice, but what if I just like laid here? What if I didn't do anything and just laid on my tummy? What would that bring me? And it's been so informative because it's giving me compression in a part of my body that I don't normally receive compression, because I am a side sleeper. Some people sleep on their stomachs and so they get that compression overnight, but I don't. And so getting that compression, but then also this idea of yielding into the ground and then feeling the ground reaction force meet my body and then give me lift is what I'm finding. And that there's this subtle back and forth, if you will, undulation wave-like sensation of yielding into the ground. Ground pushes back into me. Yield into the ground. Ground pushes back into me. And then also I feel compression in my own tissues, and that shifts around and I can feel my body almost reorganizing itself. I'm not having to consciously do it. My body's just doing it because it's getting information from the floor. And that is actually helping me on a healing journey that I'm on in terms of getting my low back feeling better, getting my legs underneath my pelvis. Like there's this whole history of injuries that I've had that have resulted in a lot of compensations. And in an effort to try to work through those and unwind those, so to speak, I've been doing a lot of like being a physical therapy patient myself and working with other movement practitioners to try to help, alleviate symptoms and bring myself back into the whole moving being that I want to be. And so tummy time just sort of struck me one day because we've been talking about it in class and I was like doing prone exercises. So, but by getting into that idea, that curiosity, I've suddenly got all this new information, and it's really cool.
It's really cool. It's so interesting that I have been doing it also in different ways, both in my morning movement practice and just laying in bed and before I start the day. And I think 2 weeks ago, as I was doing some writing, I was revisiting Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who founded Body Mind Centering, her book on the basic neurocellular patterns, which includes the yield, push, reach, grasp, pull cycle. And she was talking about how in the yield, that the undulation that you're talking about of the yielding to the compression pattern primes the tissue that's yielding to contract. It primes the tissue tone. So while on some level tummy time does develop the back chain, the extensor muscles, I also feel very deeply right now how the yielding is helping my body fold into this front center. And it's teaching the muscles in the front of my body to engage with a coherence of folding inward that I feel helps me focus. Like when I'm laying in bed on my stomach in the morning, thinking about the day that's going to happen, there's something about the yielding into my tummy into that helps me feel like I can focus on the tasks, like it organizes my vision to get through the tasks that I have ahead. Yeah.
So I love it so much. I like when we get done with this, I'm gonna lay on my stomach for a while. Because I love the way it feels. And we were talking about this before we pressed record that you know, depending on mobility and stuff, I have some like degenerating discs in my neck, so I can't really lay on my stomach for too long with like turning my head unless I had something like a little pillow for my face to look through. But so what I'll do, maybe like a modification for listeners if they feel the same thing about being on their stomach, is like I'll just put like a big pillow like on my stomach, lay on my back, or I've always wanted to get one of those things the dentist puts on you when they take x-rays. So like I guess it's like a weighted blanket, right? But just like just that pressure on the front of you. And I'm just right now I'm just so curious about like how, you know, like the front of you is kind of like the squishy organ part, you know, and there's lots of like mobility there, like what that is doing when as it presses into your spine and into the back of your body, just how it's nourishing like your spine in that way of just kind of, I'm just picturing like the 3D organs just kind of moving back into that back space. But and I love that idea, Colleen, of how it's like can focus you. That's interesting. And investigate that more.
It's been really helpful. It's interesting. I think as we wrap up, this idea of yielding in tummy time is probably the thing to leave listeners with. And then I guess I'd say we've all just spoken about sensation and sensation of the body, like attending to deeper sensation. And we started the conversation with the idea of joy. And I think that the deeper internal sensation of the body can grow into joy, a joy in a moving experience, a joy of the body. So to finish, Sarah, Juliana, anything you want to say to bring it to a close?
Yeah, that idea of sensation and connecting with what you're feeling inside, as well as some part of the environment, whether it's the floor and tummy time or anything you choose, that that there's so much information that we can get if we listen internally. And also, there's an opportunity to be self-accepting in that time that you can just be. something we don't talk a lot about in our culture or have the opportunity to do a lot unless we make space for it ourselves. But that's what I'm really enjoying about this idea of reconnecting with internal sensation, is that I can meet myself. My tissues can meet each other. I can just be in that. And who knows how that will impact me in the future? I have no idea yet, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Years and years ago, I was a physical therapist assistant. And I remember that people would be so sad when they no longer needed, quote, physical therapy. And I often thought and said to the physical therapist who owned and ran the clinic, like, aren't they just bummed that they'd no longer have this excuse to leave their working lives and come here and be? And I think they were, to have heat on them or cold and somebody's caring hands and eyes and attention to their body sensation. Yeah, this was about being within their own embodied selves.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Tears.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today. It was great conversation and a lot to, I think, both sense into and move and feel, and hopefully supportive for people as they continue to live their lives in the bodies they have.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was, so many ideas came out of this for me. I just want to dig into more, appreciate the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. I really loved it. It's so enlivening to speak with other movement enthusiasts and nerd out a bit.
Totally. Bye, y'all.
Thanks.
Bye.